Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we have some experts on China coming up, and we're going to get all up into China and the impending possible war with China, naval battle. Lots of good information there. The news coming as well. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. If you use a free VPN for increased privacy online, you may want to reconsider. Free VPNs could harvest data and expose your personal information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives in an instant. Cyber criminals could take your money, credit, and reputation. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they'll send you an alert and give you access to a dedicated restoration specialist if you become a victim. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours, yours with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year at LifeLock.com with promo code Adam. That's 25% off at LifeLock.com, promo code Adam. And now, a tip from the 1965 issue of Good Housekeeping. 120 ways to please a man.
Men find certain feminine sins hard to forgive. Are you guilty of lipstick on your teeth? A slip or strap that shows? Fussing when the wind whips your hair? Neatness, in his eyes, is a feminine virtue. So make your cosmetic corner a shining showcase.
Just one of 120 ways to please a man. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, we have Admiral James Stravitis and also Elliot Ackerman. They have a new book, a newish book, 2034, a novel of the next world war, and it involves China. And I should tell you that these guys know of what they speak because I got their bio and I read it earlier. So, Admiral, let's start with you. Your experiences. You've worked on destroyers. You worked on aircraft carriers. You've led battle groups. Tell us, brag for 10 seconds about your bona fides.
I'm a Naval Academy graduate and a long career in the Navy, including command of a destroyer, a squadron of destroyers, a carrier strike group, all in combat. So I know the front end of the spear, so to speak, in that regard. And I also, and this relates to my good friend and co-writer, Elliot Ackerman, I went to the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, did a PhD there in international law, and then became the dean. So I have sort of the policy side of this thing as well as the operational side of it.
And Elliot, your turn to brag.
I'm a former Marine Corps and CIA officer, served 5 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, fought in the Fallujah battle there. I'm also a graduate of the Fletcher School, and about 10 years ago started writing full time. I'm a contributing opinion writer at the New York Times. And my books have been nominated for the National Book Award, the Carnegie Mellon Medal in fiction and nonfiction.
So as coincidence would have it, I don't know if you guys caught it, but I was watching Tucker Carlson last night, and he was talking about that your book is a geopolitical thriller that imagines a Navy clash between the U.S. and China in the South China Sea, 2034. He did a whole piece on the Chinese Navy and how they've really been upping their game with modern equipment and stuff like that. It just ran last night. Did you guys catch that?
I did not, but I watched closely the testimony of a fellow named Admiral Phil Davidson. Admiral Davidson is the 4-star admiral in charge of all of the Pacific and the Indian Ocean. He's my counterpart from the days when I was Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. So he's the Pacific version of that. He was testifying in front of Congress and made some very strong points about the fact that the United States can't simply assume we're going to win a conflict with China. He called it a turning point in the military relationship.
How serious is China about their 100-year plan?
They are 100% serious about their 100-year plan. And I would tell you, they actually have a 200-year plan. This is a nation that historically has thought in a long sweep of time. It's an ancient civilization dating back thousands and thousands of years. And that's an advantage that they have over us. So to bring it to the present, one of the key elements in that long-range plan is ownership, as in territorial sovereignty over the South China Sea, the entire South China Sea, which is the size of the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Sea combined. They claim to own it. And the novel, 2034, begins with a set piece, a battle in the South China Sea between the U.S. and China.
Are we, it's just a sort of Navy geek question, are we going to need aircraft carriers in the future, or are we going to have some other way to distribute planes and bombs and things of that nature?
That's not a geek question at all. That is a very powerful question for the moment. And the short answer is, over time, we are going to have to distribute firepower more broadly, as you put it. We'll probably have somewhat smaller but more carriers. And over time, it's not inconceivable to me that we would move out of the paradigm that hooks us so firmly to these carriers. I'll point you back to 1941, what happened on December 7th, Pearl Harbor. Correct, Jindrad, and the entire U.S. Navy battleship fleet, which was the aircraft carrier of the time, if you will, was sunk in Pearl Harbor. So we turned to the aircraft carrier. Over time, I think there'll be a new generation of ships that will allow us to distribute that firepower more effectively.
Another weird side note is I was hearing about your story, Admiral. I said, I wonder if he knows of, I know your dad was in the Navy as well, correct?
He was in the Marine Corps.
Oh, the Marine Corps. Anyone know Jim Morrison's dad, the Rear Admiral? You did.
Wow.
I was at the when I first graduated from the Academy in 1976. He was a 2-star admiral, and he came and visited the school where we were. And of course, we were all in awe of him because he was Jim Morrison's dad, which is probably what's on his gravestone now. He's passed away.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword being Jim Morrison's dad, because on one hand, you're Jim Morrison's dad. On the other hand, your only son says you're dead. I wouldn't take as a compliment, but.
Have you ever been to the grave of Jim Morrison?
What's that? Oh, I've been to the grave. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in the very famous cemetery, as you know, in Paris. And, you know, he lived a full and a fast life.
I agree. Not usually a lot of admiral traffic around Jim Morrison grave. A lot of Hessiers, you know, hanging out and spilling a little Crevassier on it. But
disproportionate.
Yeah, I walked over there.
Of that generation, you know, I listened to The Doors and Jim Morrison sort of figured in my teenage years. So when I was in the cemetery, I definitely made it to the graveside.
Generations. Sorry, Elliot. Go ahead.
I just say, I think the Doors transcend generations.
Oh, absolutely. So. Timeless stuff. We've had Robbie Krieger and Densmore, I think, have both been on this show. All right, let me play this clip from Tucker Carlson last night, because it was just last night he was talking about the Chinese sort of gearing up for the naval battles in the future, and it's just a complete coincidence that you guys are on less than 24 hours later. Here we go.
Last year, we learned that China has quickly developed the world's largest naval force. In 2015, China had 255 battle force ships. Now they have more than 360. And many of those ships are more capable than anything in the American naval fleet. So how are we responding to this? Well, at the White House yesterday, Joe Biden addressed it effectively. What's the American military's response? Here's what Joe Biden said.
Some of it's relatively straightforward work, where we're making good progress designing body armor that fits women properly, tailoring combat uniforms for women, creating maternity flight suits, and updating requirements for their hairstyles. And some of it is going to take an intensity of purpose and mission.
All right.
To really change the culture and
you
habits.
You can pause it. All right, that's him busting Biden's chops, but it is interesting that China's added, I don't know, was it 100 and some odd ships in a short period of time? And then what about that assertion that they're going to have stuff that's better than our equipment?
I think that overstates what's happening. China has about, to give you the numbers, China has around 370 so-called battle force ships. These are simply warships that are capable of operating at some distance. The United States has about 300. So it is a correct statement that China has more of these battle force warships than the United States. But if you put them all together and had them fight each other, the United States would easily win because our ships are more capable. And in particular, in today's world, we have these nuclear-powered aircraft carriers. What we ought to worry about is the following. If we ever did get into a battle with China, China would be fighting that war on their home court. They would have operations in the South China Sea. They would have the aircraft operating from land bases there. It would be a tough fight for the United States. I still think we have the capability to prevail, but that gap is closing, and I think that is accurate.
How many years into the 100-year plan are we?
Well, as you might or might not expect, the 100-year plan is revised every 5 years or so. So it's kind of a rolling timeline. But I think a fair way to think about it is China began to think holistically about what they call One Belt, One Road. It's a geoeconomic, geopolitical strategy, realistically about 10 years ago as they really lifted the majority of their population out of poverty. So they're at the very early stages is the short answer to the question.
Brian.
I have a question. I just thought of this because the clip Adam played was the stats that Tucker quoted, I just realized, were between 2015 and today. And of course, it turned into a burn on Biden. But were we too soft on China? Should we have been doing more? Or is this just the natural evolution of the last 4 years?
No, we should have been taking a more assertive stance with China. I would argue going back to not only the Trump administration, but before that to the Obama administration, and before that to the Bush administration. Really, the bet in the international system was
They're coming for you.
Yeah, satellite.
That's right.
Yeah, it's my satellite alarm. The Chinese are looking. Mostly they find me by the reflection.
Sure.
The bet in the international community was that by allowing China to integrate in through the World Trade Organization, to give them a lot of space, that gradually they would come to become a positive player. That really hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. And they've simply become more aggressive, more sharp-elbowed in business. They've built up their military. They're leaning on small countries across this One Belt, One Road. It's become pretty clear that China is our major geopolitical and geostrategic opponent, certainly for the first part of this century. I think that light has gone on, both on the Republican side and the Democratic side.
How difficult, I'll pose this one to Elliot, the nuanced relationship with China is, you know, back in the day, you had your enemies pretty well defined, Nazi Germany, later Russia, Japan, you know, we knew who were fighting. But we didn't have LeBron James defending Germany, and we didn't have Disney, you know, making their product so we wouldn't offend Imperial Japan or the Soviet Union. Now there's this weird blurred line, which is we need these people. They're making our phones. They're making our tennis shoes. No one wants to offend them. God forbid somebody
Our movies.
Yeah. Somebody from the NBA says he wants to stand with was it not Tibet? He wanted to stand with Hong Kong, and he gets shouted out of the league by all the NBA players. I mean, this is a totally different situation. And how do we make our way through? How do we navigate this?
I think you showed that clip, or what Tucker was getting at, to select that clip with, you know, Biden's reaction to this announcement of what's going on in the South China Sea, is to discuss the latest in maternity garments and form-fitting body armor, is to kind of get at this theme that when the barbarians arrive at the gate, we're probably going to all be arguing about what pronouns to assign them instead of actually like dealing with the threat. And, you know, one of the things we very much get out of the book, I mean, it's focused on China, but it's also focused on the pervasive political dysfunction that exists in the United States right now that makes it very challenging for us to put together any type of holistic, forward-looking response to not necessarily a China-specific threat, but any type of threat. However, speaking to the China-specific threat, like, absolutely. We're living in a society right now where we are, if not directly, certainly indirectly affected by China and everything from our sports, you know, LeBron James, our media. Listen, if you go, I'm not saying this to toot our horns, but if you go on Amazon right now, our book is number 7 on Amazon. I've published, this is my 6th book, The Admiral's Tenth. I have never in my life received so many 1-star reviews. I usually get about like 6% 1-star reviews. We've got over 60% 1-star reviews.
You made it.
Yeah.
I mean, take a look. I mean, listen, I'm scratching my head. We are enmeshed in every single way, and to pretend that this isn't going on is lunacy.
Yeah, look, we're a dream come true as a superpower, because what a delight it would be if you had a foe and that entire country that was your foe was arguing about how racist they were and trying to figure out the gender pronouns and canceling Speedy Gonzalez while you were just building up your fucking fleet. It's insane that we bought into all this stuff.
Well, they're not arguing about that.
We are. Yes.
I'm saying the fact that they're not should concern us.
Yes.
The fact that, you know, what are we, you know, we just spent the last, what, 3 or 4 days talking about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
I know. They're not even from here. We don't even like them.
The Chinese were teaming up to own space together.
it's we're just like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
The word I like to use is decadent.
Yes.
It's decadent behavior. I myself, you know, I'm a veteran of our wars. 20 years of war is really decadent late empire behavior. And it's worth us waking up to that if we want to have another American century. And I think one of the inspirations for the book was to try to just, you know, shake people by the collar and say, you don't want 2034 to look like this 2034.
Well, it's sort of like, I know everything is problematic in our society, but there's real problems out there. And we'll fucking long for the days when we're arguing about Speedy Gonzalez and Dr. Seuss when the shit goes down.
Well, it's a great luxury to be able to have the arguments about what we're going to paint on the side of the basketball court while we're all eating nachos.
Right.
And if we get our act together, we're not going to be able to have those arguments anymore.
That being said, Admiral, how pumped are you for Top Gun, the next one? When is that coming out?
Well, it's almost as good as if the Doors were going to put out a new album. It's really that good. I'm very excited. The whole Navy's excited. You know, that film came out right after I came out of the Naval Academy, and it.
The Admiral.
I think everybody just froze.
Oh, man, the internet went down just when we were getting to the real subject I wanted to get to, which is the release of Top Gun.
That's coming out July 2nd.
July 2nd?
Yeah. And I think Newsom just announced reopenings of movie theaters.
Ooh. And then what about Fast and Furious 9? Because if that comes out the same weekend Top Gun's coming out.
I know it got pushed, but I don't know to when.
Well, do your job, son.
I know.
Focus, would you please? Yeah. Oh, man. It seems to me, I'm just going to speculate while everyone has been frozen out with our technological difficulties. It seems to me that with the range of aircrafts improving and with drones and missile technologies, you know, the notion of an aircraft carrier, I'm now looking at Dawson as someone to reflect on. An aircraft carrier is about the oldest idea in the world. Like, we're just going to take a patch of landing strip and put it in the middle of the ocean, and you can land your airplane on that. But it's a very old idea, if you really just think about it conceptually. The aircraft carriers are modern. The planes are modern. Things have changed. But the concept of we're going to take a patch of landing field, put it in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. You can take planes off from that. Sorry. Hold on.
Okay, here's Adam.
Hold on. We had a little technical lockup. Sorry. Top Gun. As a recruiter.
We're back.
Well, no, as a recruiting tool, it's got to be huge, right?
Oh, sure. Oh,
it's huge. And it also just kind of rattles the DNA of the Navy in very positive ways. And as I was saying a minute ago, everyone is kind of dying to see what Tom Cruise looks like as a senior officer. Pretty hard to imagine that.
Currently scheduled for a 4th of July release, 4th of July weekend.
Of course.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll all be able to go to the theater for that, because that really is a film you want to see in a theater.
Yes. You know, remember Top Gun? Remember how Top Gun was always the movie that people put on to test out their home sound system? Like, dude, you got to check this out.
Right.
Top Gun. Like, you're going to want to see Top Gun Maverick in the theater.
So what's the future of our Navy? What are we working on? What technology? What are we building? What are we building now that would kind of surprise us, or that may be the future? Is it faster and more maneuverable, or is it bigger? What's the trend?
Three big trends. One, you can't see and you can't touch, and it's cyber. It's building the ability to conduct offensive cyber operations that can get into the command and control networks of our opponents. Number two is unmanned vehicles. That you can picture, right? And we think sort of drones, but I'm talking unmanned vehicles as in from nanotechnology, very, very small swarms, to huge unmanned vehicles that can operate in space, others that can be at the bottom of the sea. But taking the men and women off those platforms allows you to operate them in much more extreme ways in terms of speed and depth and altitude and so forth. And then thirdly, to Elliot's career, thirdly is special forces and enhancing the ability of our special forces teams. Elliot was in the Marine Corps, the equivalent of a Navy SEAL. They call them recon Marines, recon battalions of Marines. There'll be more of an emphasis on using smaller numbers of troops, but more elite, more highly trained forces in the future. That triad of cyber, unmanned, special forces is really the future of the armed forces.
Well,
and pretty much the Navy as well.
It's also kind of the future of fast food, right? Less employees, yeah. More... Yep.
Robotics
out the door.
One guy kind of knows what's going on versus a whole bunch of doofuses. I'm sorry, Elliot, did you want to say something?
I just had to interject one moment. Sometimes I do have to jump in with the Admiral and remind him that the Navy SEALs are actually the equivalent of recon Marines, not the other one.
Can I ask, Admiral, because we're talking about, you know, special forces in the future and things being manned and unmanned, I'd love to get both of your perspective on Space Force. And if you think, you know, we're going in the right direction or what direction that even is.
Yeah. Well, the television series was really dopey.
The Steve Carell.
Steve Carell. But the real Space Force is an idea whose time has come. And it's not big. I think people think it's going to be like some huge force and Starship Enterprise will be driving around out there. No, this is going to be small in the context of the Department of Defense, maybe around 10,000 to 15,000. Remember, there's 1.5 million people in uniform in the Department of Defense. So it's a small number, and their job is to procure and operate the satellite constellations in the sky. But we need them because we need a cadre of people who can truly, deeply, madly focus just on space, because it is going to explode in terms of size, as I was just talking about, more big unmanned platforms up there. So good idea. I would say, to conclude, what we really need more than a space force is a cyber force, a force of men and women who are really focused on this cyber problem. We don't have that now. That's insane. Over the next few years.
Yeah. Final question for both of you. What is the end game for China? Do they want more landmass? Do they want everyone sort of under their rule? I mean, I think we can all agree there's nations that are sort of content with staying the size they are, who they are. Canada comes to mind. And then historically, there have been other nations that have wanted to kind of spread their wings a little bit. We've done a little of both. We've gone over, done some stuff, and then we usually come home at some point. What's China's end game? What's the big picture?
I'll take a swing at that. I think that, first of all, you're right to kind of point out nations have DNA about whether or not they are expansionist. China historically has not been an expansionist power. China often refers to itself as the Middle Kingdom, meaning they simply assume that they are already between earth and heaven, therefore above the rest of the world, therefore they don't need to expand. Don't forget, they built the Great Wall of China not to expand, but to delineate the extent of the Chinese empire. What has changed is that China recognizes it has to have a functioning, massive economy to support its massive population. That's what One Belt, One Road, that's their strategy, is all about: exporting finished goods, importing raw materials. And I think where they will go in terms of expansion is to kind of reach out and pull Russia alongside them. And let me tell you something. To the north of China is Siberia. It's the size of the landmass of the United States of America, and only about 20 million Russians live there. It's full of hydrocarbons, natural gas, oil, gold, diamonds, rare earths, arable land, fresh water. China looks at that like my dog looks at a ribeye steak. It looks really, really good. Watch for China, not to invade Russia, not to take over Siberia, but to kind of pull them alongside as a bit of a junior partner. That will give them the raw materials they desperately want. And then they'll expand that influence along the route of One Belt, One Road through the Indian Ocean. And the next big target will be Africa. Again, not going to take over these countries. They're not going to colonize them. But what they're looking for is a large global footprint that can assure them of a functioning economy and continue to raise the standard of living within China. That's the goal.
Elliot, are they laughing their asses off at us, like arguing over the Green New Deal every 10 minutes?
I would suspect that culturally we're not impressing anybody in China. But that being said, I mean, just to echo what the points the Admiral was making is, you know, oftentimes the argument that's made against a scenario like what we laid out in 2034 ever occurring is the economic interconnectivity between not only China and the United States, but China and the world. And hopefully we won't see a scenario like that play out. But similar arguments were made at the beginning of the 20th century that the economic interconnectivity of all the European nations, the families being intermarried, would prevent any type of war in Europe. And obviously in 1914 with the First World War, we saw that that was not the case. And you know, you could have a similar escalation of circumstances in the case with China. And one of the themes we get out in the book, because the book is as much about China as it is also sort of a reflection on the United States, is, you know, if we look at the last 100 years as being an American century, that American century was forged in two fires, right? The First World War and the Second World War.
those were two wars that we did not start, but we sure as hell finished those wars and were the beneficiary of those wars for decades and decades into the future. So in 2034, we imagine a war started between China and the United States. But you have to read the book to find out who finishes that war and how to benefit from it.
Well, the book is 2034, a novel of the next world war. It's available now on Amazon. Don't mind the bad ratings. Those are just the Chinese bots giving it the one star. Yes,
if anything, it should intrigue you more.
That's right.
Yes. Admiral Elliott, thank you guys for joining us. Very enlightening stuff. All right. Let me hit Solo Stove, and then we'll do some news. Whether you're camping in the woods or hanging out in the backyard, nothing like a roaring fire. I love my Solo Stove. It's so well made, stainless steel. It burns so clean and so hot. And by the way, you don't get that smoky fire pit smell from it. It's, like I said, stainless steel construction designed to regulate airflow and burn more efficiently. So just a little smoke, you'll wonder why there's so much fire with such little smoke. No campfire smell on clothes or hair. Nothing left but ultra-fine ash for easy cleanup, especially when it's cold outside like it is now. Portable and built to last. Easy to light. Just use a few bits of starter. Lifetime warranty for every purchase. It's Solo Stove, right, Dawson?
No one needs a reason to gather around the fire. Solo Stove just took away any reason not to. And now you can get $10 off when you use promo code Adam at checkout. Just go to solostove.com. And remember, you get $10 off when you use promo code Adam.
All right, quick break. Come back to the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Meet news with Gina. Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, long-awaited news with some crazy Los Angeles Unified School District stuff. Teachers Union has reached a deal that paves the way for a return to classrooms by mid-April.
Just
a hair before graduation. This is according to ABC7. Preschool and elementary schools would reopen first in mid-April and secondary schools at the end of April. The deal allows for
I heard a stat today that said out of over 500,000 COVID tabulated deaths, under 300 kids. That's the stat. If there's anything you'd want to be during this pandemic, it would be a 15-year-old.
That's right.
If there's anything you wouldn't want to be, it's an elderly person in a nursing home. That is the difference between possible death and fucking zero burger. This is a zero burger for 14-year-old kids.
And it's not just okay, you're right. They're getting something. $2 billion set aside for districts that hit the goal of getting, everything ready for in-person learning by their set dates. The state also set aside 25,000 doses of vaccine for LAUSD staff. And there's still going to be a combination of in-person classes, online learning. And crucially, the agreement says teachers, along with nurses and other union members, will not have to return to work until they're vaccinated. But again, we're talking about the end of April, and Biden said everyone should be vaccinated by the end of May. So thank you. It's a short window.
End of April for high schoolers?
Yes, secondary school, high school.
Right. Until whatever the new variant hysteria comes out and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's literally school ends end of May,
right?
Beginning of June. That's the schedule.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think any of these folks are volunteering to come back for summer school. That's it. I mean, my kids are going to go back to school for 3 weeks.
Yes. And you think
for prom.
That's what I was going to say. But wait a second. You can't go to prom. That sweaty, breathing, singing in a closed room.
That's right.
They wouldn't. I'm sure they won't allow prom.
Yeah, there would be no prom.
I'll bet they'll have modified versions. That's my prediction.
Maybe on the football field.
They'll have the home
outdoor in a tent, something.
Maybe. Ugh. Well, the teachers union certainly did not let this go to waste, did they? Jesus fucking Christ. Please, I've been on record as hating fucking teachers for a decade. Everyone told me, oh, they're heroes. They're heroes. They're heroes. Why do you hate teachers? I was like, because most of them are fucking horrible. And this thing where it's like, they're heroes. They're heroes. They're heroes. They work less than half the year. And it's like, they don't get paid as much as a fire. Yeah, they don't work that much. They've chosen a job where they have 3 months off for the summer. I don't know anyone else who has that job in every fucking federal holiday there is. Oh, heroes, heroes, heroes. I think we've found out who teachers are through this pandemic. If we'd not found that out, and this thing where it's like, well, it's not them, it's the union. All right, it's the fucking union. Then they should be pushing back against the union, and they're not. So thank you. I was early money on the fucking cowardly teachers and their shithead unions. And the whole union thing is starting to jump the shark a little, too, because there was a time when we definitely needed a union. Now the unions have turned into, well, you can't fire the ones that molest the kids. They just get full pay and go to, like, teacher's prison in Anaheim or something.
Yeah, the rubber room.
Yes.
The corporation is the corporations.
Yes, it's time to start modifying. And by the way, we want to get rid of school choice. Shouldn't everyone in America just be outraged by that concept of we want to get rid of options for schooling? Haven't we learned that we need options for schooling?
Yeah, this puts a pretty fine point on it.
Yes.
This experience.
I agree. And there is, it's like, if you're against school choice or your teacher thinks it's unsafe to go back into the classroom, you're just a fucking liar at this point, and you don't give a fuck about kids. There's no other choice in that. How can you be against school choice, seeing what we've just seen? How can you lobby against it? And how can you be for the teachers' unions? They're fucking despicable. They're cowards. It's been a goddamn calendar year. The rest of the country's open. It's completely safe to conduct business. The kids are not in danger at all. Get the fuck back to work, you fucking cowards. Jesus Christ. And you fucking people that want to tear me a new asshole for speaking this way, go fuck yourself with a fucking mop handle, you fucking pussies. Jesus Christ, we're talking about kids. Anybody? Anyone want to chime in? Or no, he said something bad about teachers. Of course I said something bad about teachers. They're fucking cowards that shut the school down for no reason, and they're blackmailing everyone to go back to fucking work. Of course I said something about it. Where's everyone else? Where are the fucking voices? Jesus Christ. So fucking mad. He sent out a fucking tweet calling them stupid or liars or fucking cowards. That's what else is there? They're either lying or they're cowards or they don't want to go back to work. It's or all the above. What's the other option? Is there a hero option? Can we check that box? I don't think so. I mean, they just got a fucking thing on their website like, hey, if you're going to go on spring vacation, don't put pictures of you in Bermuda. It'll send the wrong message. We're trying to say.
There's a Facebook page.
That's poor, yeah. Poor
listen, the teachers' unions are the teachers' unions. They're mobbed up. They're mobbed up with the fucking politicians and Gavin Newsom and everyone else. I get it. It's business. They are doing their business. They don't give a fuck about kids. They're doing business. They want everything. Fine. They see this as an opportunity to get what they want. Fine. Where's everyone else? Where are all the voices? Where are all the fucking activists? Where are all the people on Twitter that are outraged about everything all the time? Where are all the fucking celebrities? Where are all the comedians? Oh, they got a problem. They got a lot of opinions about fucking Megan Marcos. They got fucking name.
Imelda Marcos.
Forget it.
I'm on a roll. They got tons of thoughts about the fucking royal family. There's zero fucking burgers. Living in a house in Santa Barbara. They got a lot of thoughts about that. No thoughts about the teachers or the teachers' unions. Thanks, cowards. If you guys would have fucking, if we'd had a groundswell of outrage by the Hollywood community or by the Twitter sphere or whoever it is, we probably could have pressured these fucking cowards to going back to work. But you guys were silent because you are scared of being called a name for calling out cowards. Ugh. Jesus Christ. Beam me up, Scotty. Whoa.
Maybe you hadn't done it for your mansion.
Yeah, your ivory tower.
That's right. Yeah. That's where I sit every day. I just sit in my mansion. Or we go to Oklahoma City and fucking work in a crowded club because we're not pussies. Oh.
You know what's interesting with Meghan Markle?
All the fucking pussies. And you guys trying to turn this into a race issue. You fucking coward pussy teachers unions trying to turn this white against black. Oh, that's such an awesome plan. The little brown kids are suffering. The little black kids are suffering. And I know what we'll do. We'll try to turn this into a race issue where only the white privileged kids want their kids to go back to school. That is an awesome, diabolical, cowardly, chicken shit, fucking nefarious plan to try to take race, try to inject race in this and turn communities against each other based on race. Blah. God, you guys should be fucking disgusted by these people, and you should be disgusted at yourself for not fucking saying shit. Anyway, other than that, I don't have strong opinions.
As my dad would say, other than that, how did you enjoy the play, Mrs. Lincoln? And it's interesting that you make the Meghan Markle comparison, which is so timely.
Well, I made the Marco comparison, but
to be fair, yeah.
The Greek heiress.
There are so many people who are coming out going, my heart breaks for her. I feel for her. So we're putting more energy into, when we talk about a class system and class warfare, into diving on the, you know, on the sympathy of this woman who is Oprah's neighbor. They are fine. She is very, very wealthy. She will be fine. But what about all these kids that are sitting in Echo Park that aren't allowed to go to school? But we're so concerned that if somebody hurt Meghan Markle's feelings, she's going to be okay. I promise.
Oh, there was this story that some mother like wrote in concerned, and the teachers union like wrote her back. I was like, oh, by the way, what's your race? Because they were just hoping she was a white chick so they could trot her out. The idea that they turn this into a race issue is, I guess everything's a race issue now, but it's such fucking weak sauce. Make your fucking argument and go back to work, cowards. Thank you.
It's pretty cynical.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, a federal judge ruled Kobe Bryant's widow, Vanessa, can, in fact, get the names of the four L.A. County Sheriff's deputies that were taking the pictures and texting the pictures of the crash site. Her attorneys claim they shared unauthorized pictures snapped at the site where Kobe and his daughter and seven others died. Lawyers for the deputies argued that releasing their names would make them targets on the internet, but the judge didn't buy that. Now Vanessa Bryant's lawyers can get, you know, whatever dirt or information on the deputies from an internal affairs investigation. Vanessa's lawyer said transparency promotes accountability. We look forward to presenting Ms. Bryant's case in court. It's just about making an example of them or you're going to track all the places they texted pictures. I don't know.
I think you would like to prevent this from happening in the future.
Absolutely.
And this may be a step toward preventing that. Although, you know, you think about these guys, you know, you think about them as a sheriff, but they're really 26-year-old guys who were fans who had a couple of years at JUCO and passed the sheriff's test, and they have their phones with them and stuff. Like, think about where you were at when you were 25. Like, you would have taken pictures and you would have showed it to somebody in the locker room or whatever. Like, I'm not making excuses for them, but it's kind of bound to happen. But on the other hand, get them out there, sufficiently humiliate them, and let that be a warning to anyone else who wants to do this.
Yeah. So that's what they're now able to do. Just in terms of clerical errors, this one I think is number one with a bullet right now. A New York City murder suspect has mistakenly been released from Rikers Island, and he is still at large. Fox News reports that 26, and we have his picture in case you see him around, 26-year-old Christopher Bugs was jailed without bail at Rikers while awaiting trial for more than 3 years. He's accused of fatally shooting a 55-year-old man outside a bodega in Brooklyn in 2018, and he was arrested 3 days later. But in a different criminal contempt case, a judge sentenced Bugs to just 30 days, and that sentence was mistakenly listed as the final disposition in the murder case. Jail staffers didn't realize the error. They released him on Tuesday. Corrections officers warned that he is considered armed and very dangerous.
Yeah, seems that way. Why don't we have bodegas out here?
I don't know. They're the best part of living in New York, the best sandwiches, and you can grab anything you need. And there's bodega cats.
I know. We got AMPM and 7-Eleven, and you can get a world's shittiest hot dog injected with liquid cheese. Too much good stuff. Well, can we have something where you could get a sandwich and a bottle of wine?
A good sandwich.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like a nice deli sandwich.
I'm sorry. For not for me, but for the people listening who don't know what a bodega is. What's a bodega?
It's like a little corner store that might sell some produce. You could probably get some deli. Deli items there. We used to have dairy drive-thrus. Do you guys remember that? Oh, yeah.
Nope.
I think it was like Carnation. I'm sure. There were like the dairy. And you'd like drive through it. There's one over here in like Glendale or Burbank or something. And you'd pull up and it'd be like a quart of milk and pack of cigarettes and some SpaghettiOs. And they'd just like hand them out. Are they still around, Dawson?
I don't think so. But there was one in the town I grew up in. And I was in my uncle's car once and he was going through and he needed a pack of cigarettes. He needed a pack of Cools. He smoked Cools menthols. And
did he escape from Rikers recently? Because
this place was run by an Asian family.
Oh, boy.
And they kept trying to hand him a six-pack of Coors.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
That's tough.
Cool.
Were those called Carnation? Or were they called, not Carnation, but were they called Dairies or something? Like, there's a weird name to those.
I think ours was just an independent one. I don't think it was a chain, so I don't know.
Country superstar Travis Tritt, Brian, is joining us tomorrow.
I'm on record as, you know, his song, It's a Great Day to Be Alive, very, very impactful in my life and my recovery and my sickness and everything. It means a lot to me.
Well, I'll tell him that when I talk to him tomorrow. But you zip
son
it.
Son of a bitch.
You zip it.
Adam, get your run, don't walk to Panorama City, because I think there's one there.
No, you should run.
I'm looking on Yelp right now.
Yeah, I guarantee they're selling horchata and pinatas. It's not the one from my childhood. Panorama City. Woo!
Oofa. All right. So we may have a reason for the bizarre dog napping involving Lady Gaga's French bulldog. According to TMZ, that incident may have been part of a gang initiation because similar crimes in the LA area have been reported recently.
And what happened to our gangs?
I know. Fit the shooting that nearly killed the dog walker, Ryan Fisher. TMZ also says the woman who found the dogs has not received her big $500,000 reward because police haven't cleared her yet. A source says authorities don't believe she was part of the dog napping, but they're investigating whether she had any involvement after the fact. But is that the new gang initiation? Dog napping?
Just get jumped in.
Yeah, what about jumped in or even going super old school? Like, you got to swallow this goldfish.
I think that's a fraternity.
Yeah, that's different. That's different
well,
than
these
blood
were
in, blood
initiations.
Out.
Were initiations back in the day. I'm saying now you have to just shoot a random person in West Hollywood. That's
and take their dogs.
Take their dog.
And take their dog. That's an awesome initiation. But yeah, so Lady Gaga's like 500K, no questions asked. But now she's like, well, the police have a whole bunch of questions.
Sure, yeah, I won't ask the questions.
So I'm not asking.
Yeah, I'll be in New York.
I'll be with my checkbook in New York until the authorities are done asking questions. Cause,
that's right.
Because let's really try to distill this down. Whoever did it found out about the 500K almost immediately.
Right. Yeah.
You think so, yeah.
Because that was in the same 24-hour news cycle.
Right. The dogs wouldn't have just been pushed out of the car, I would assume. I mean, I would assume they'd go back to headquarters or whatever with the young with the young pledges. And someone did the $500,000 math, and it kind of makes sense to me that they just handed it off to some chick they knew who wasn't in the gang and said, here you go. But I have no idea.
Oh, that's a different. I thought you were going a different way. I'm only saying this because TMZ says there's been like a rash of these puppy broker. They like, here, what can I get for these dogs? She's like, perfect. And then watches the news and was like, I got a better idea. There's got to be black market puppy brokers.
Interesting.
The 500K bounty was front and center, right? Like that,
yes.
That came out.
Oh, yes.
That came out quickly, right?
That news was a headline 2 seconds after this guy was shot and almost killed. Nobody cared about that. They only cared about this reward for the dogs.
Yeah. I'd make a horrible boyfriend for Lady Gaga. Because she'd be like,
agreed,
$500,000, $500,000. You'd be like, you don't think $75K would get the dog back?
This is going to motivate some people. I mean, $75K is a lot of money.
I know for you, it's a fucking clutch and a piano tune. But for most of America, that's enough to bring a fucking dog back. I don't think we, I mean, 500 is great, but I'll tell you, the same person, no one's going to look at 150 grand and go, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Waste of my
turn
time.
Turn your nose up. Yeah.
I'm going to Petco. No, they'd take the $150 the same way as they take the $500. They take over anything over 25. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So anyway, I wonder who this, do you know who this girl is? I mean, whoever gave her the dog, I mean, if it's my plan, someone had to figure out that this person cannot be, you know, have gang tattoos or something. But it's got to be somebody's sister or something, right, or somebody something. But you also have to know they're just going to be on her and she's going to do something stupid.
Yeah,
right?
They're going to ask some questions and dig.
Right.
Not the dogs.
Yeah,
right.
I know we don't really care about these things and there's bigger problems, but I am dying to know who this woman is. So I will absolutely tell you when we find out. Winston Marshall, he's the banjoist and lead guitar player for Mumford & Sons. He's, quote unquote, taking some time away from the band following the social media backlash surrounding his praise for a far right writer named Andy Ngo, N-G-O. So the controversy came about when Marshall praised Ngo for his book called Unmasked: Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. And he tweeted, "Finally had time to read your important book. You're a brave man." Didn't go over super well. So Andy Ngo, in a statement on Twitter, he said, "Over the past few days, I've come to better understand the pain caused by the book I endorsed. I've offended not only a lot of people I don't know, but also those closest to me, the band, I imagine, including my bandmates. And for that, I'm truly sorry. As a result of my actions, I'm taking time away from the band to reexamine my blind spots. For now, please know that I realize how my endorsements have the potential to be viewed as approvals of hateful, divisive behavior. I apologize. This was not my intention."
We are living in fucking backwards land. Andy Ngo is a reporter who covered Antifa.
Who's also Vietnamese, by the way.
Yes. Right? Who got the shit beat out of him, like in Portland, at one of those like Antifa rallies or when they were trying to take over the courthouse or whatever it is. So Andy Ngo is this reporter who is trying to fucking get to the bottom of Antifa. And so he wrote a book on Antifa. Now, bookstores in Portland have been pressured not to sell his book and all sorts of shit. I don't know why. Since when did Antifa become our friend? Like, I get it. They're the wokest of the woke, but they also burn a lot of shit down. This guy just wrote a fucking book on these guys that burn a lot of shit down. And we're going to attack him and we're going to attack anyone who supports his book.
The
book's about Antifa. I mean, you can talk about Proud Boys and you can talk about anyone else, you know, white supremacists, whatever. Antifa's a piece of shit, too. They just happen to be on the other side. What's the support of Antifa? And then this guy who plays a fucking banjo for a living supports Andy Ngo, who's had the shit beat out of him by Antifa and brain damage and everything else. He was on Reasonable Doubt in 2019. Writes a book about Antifa. And then this guy supports his book about Antifa and he's got to fucking apologize.
Take a step back to reexamine
read the book. Yeah.
And I don't even know if Andy Ngo, I know everyone is far right, like the far right. He's just writing a book about Antifa. I don't even know what far right is. He doesn't like Antifa. Nobody should like Antifa. I know we're always worried about QAnon and, you know, Ted Nugent, but we shouldn't like Antifa either. This is this weird insanity where we're defending Antifa, or like when Black Lives Matter burns down a bodega, we got to defend them too. Criminals are fucking criminals, right and left. I don't know why one side has to shut down the other. This guy wrote a book about Antifa. We should all learn about Antifa, or at least let Andy Ngo, who's a journalist who knows about Antifa, create a book. Why would you apologize? And who the fuck needs him to apologize for saying read a book?
Ugh. I think he's desperately trying to stay and be one of the Anne sons. Yeah, so I think this is probably for the band.
Right, but the band doesn't give a fuck. A bunch of pussies on the internet pressured them. The guy wrote he was like beaten to almost death by Antifa in, I don't know, Portland?
2019.
Like, he had brain damage and stuff.
It's interesting. The guy specifically mentioned his bandmates or whatever. I wonder if those guys were specifically upset or if they're, like you said, like you alluded to, they're responding to pressure from fans or whatever.
It's all, and I don't even know if it's pressure from fans anymore. There's just a fucking woke culture out there that just has to have everyone walk back everything that's said. If it's just a little to the right, And the band probably dealt with all that and just went, fucking go apologize. We don't want to deal with it. I'm sure Mumford & Sons is not big Antifa fans.
Well, they got into a little bit of a controversy in 2018 because they had an in-studio picture and Jordan Peterson was there.
Yep, I was just about to tell you that.
Oh, they
That's
don't
exactly
want trouble.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Jordan Peterson, who just happens to speak the truth about things, he needs to be fucking silenced as well. Jesus Christ. Antifa is bad, everybody. Andy Ngo wrote a book about it. That's fine. We don't have to burn it. We don't have to ban it from the bookstores. You don't have to apologize for recommending it. It's just another book about a subject that presumably he knows well since he had the shit beat out of him by Antifa. He was like embedded with Antifa for long periods of time. So maybe we should read the book about Antifa and learn about it and learn about Antifa. All right. We're living in strange ass times, people. Let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
All right. Oh, last but not least, there is Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other. How about you get your bundle on at Geico? Go to geico.com. Take your homeowner's or your renter's policy and get it hooked up with your automotive policy. That's the bundle, people. Go to geico.com. Get a quote. See just how much you could save when you bundle at geico.com because they make it that easy. All right. The book, 2034, novel of the next world war. I'm intrigued. It's available now on Amazon. And Jeff Cesario, What Was I Thinking, is the album. And until next time, this is Adam for Jeff, Regina, and the Admiral, and Elliot, and Bald saying mahalo.
Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla and leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up any one of Adam's books. The latest, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, is available everywhere. Get the links at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle your policies at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.